Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night.
Love it.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And of course, you know, I get the best guests in the world. And now I just dragged out a guy. I had to chase him like a dog, but I finally got him. And that's Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. And that's CapitalWaveForecast.com. Shaw Galani, welcome aboard, my brother.
Well, thanks, Todd. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, it's I know Shaw. Just so you guys understand, Shaw and I go back to the CBOE back in the early '80s, and Shaw's a hedge fund guy, and he's been all about the option world. So, Shaw, tell us, what are you up to these days? What's going on, man?
These days, I'm living the life of Riley. Fortunately, I'm trading just a little bit for myself, and mostly just enjoying life and the fruits of my labor for all those years, Todd. But in the process, I'm doing a lot of writing. I have two newsletters that I write. They're subscription newsletters, which I really enjoy doing. I recommend stocks in there. One of them is the Capital Wave Forecast, and the other is Zen Trading Circle. So I have a lot of fun doing that and knocking it out of the park on both of them, especially Zen lately. Just the markets have been going our way, and we're doing a lot of shorting and put buying in terms of the retail stocks. And as they've been going down, we've been raking it in. So it's fun doing that.
That's awesome. So, Shaw, you know, I know you're on Varney all the time, and, you know, you got an opinion of the market. So what do you think of the markets here? How'd you like that action on Friday? The NASDAQ got clobbered. And, of course, we had a pretty good rally late in the day, but, you know, pretty much got clobbered for the day and due for a beatdown. What'd you think of it?
It was surprising to me, you know, based on Comey's testimony and how the market reacted to that, based on how the futures were and how the market reacted this morning to the news in London, the vote in London and the hung parliament, everything looked very good. So falling out of bed was a bit of a surprise. And I'm not even sure what triggered it. Man, you might have had a better handle on it than me, but it looked like a bit of profit taking, and it looked like some computer program selling. That's what it, you know, appeared to be when I was watching the screens. But I think this market is resilient. I think there's a good chance that whatever slight sell off there is it will probably, and there's a bit under this market. It wouldn't surprise me to see it firm up and go make new highs again and again next week and the week after.
Well, you did call 20,000 when I think we were at 18.5 or something like that. At least Barney gives you credit for that all the time. I don't know if you did or not. I know you did, actually. I was there with you. But so you don't think that the markets have a reason to sell off yet? And why, if not, what are you looking for?
Well, I don't know that they have a reason. They've been looking for a reason, and they haven't found one. And there have been some potential reasons, whether it's the domestic political problems here in the U.S. and everybody and their uncle fighting Trump at every turn, and him not being able to get through his infrastructure. That's been nothing in terms of deregulation that's been meaningful to date, and certainly no tax reform in sight. And of course, the health care issue. He's done nothing to resolve the problems we have with the Affordable Care Act, so-called Affordable Care Act. So that, you know, the failures on his part, the administration's part, to move anything forward, that's plenty of reason for the market to sell off. It hasn't done it. So it's telling us it's just wanting to go up. And there's plenty of reasons for that. Fundamentally, there's really the big picture for me, Todd, is there are fewer shares out there because since 98, I think we had about close to 7,500 listed companies on the U.S. exchanges. Now there are about 3,500, at least, you know, those that are worth trading with any decent volume and worth owning and trading. There are since 2006, there have been over $7 trillion of share buybacks. Then you got all the mergers and acquisition stuff going on and private equity stuff happening. And there are just fewer companies' shares out there. So with the reduction in share count and new capital being created every day, with the market going up, creating new capital, providing new capital for shareholders to go out and leverage up and buy more, the market seems to me to have a very firm bid under for good reason. And that's a good enough reason for me. You know, good supply and demand wise, less supply, more demand, pretty fundamental equation.
Well, I mean, we both know one thing, right? We've been doing this a long time. We both know that the markets do go up on an average of 9% year over year. So you can never get hurt. If you don't get crazy and you trade good stuff, you can withstand the test of time because the markets are going to go up, right? You agree with that?
I 100% agree with that, but being traders, as you and I are, we're timers, so we don't like to be stuck if the market's going down, and we want to be short if it's going down, and so we move in now. But for folks who are, more passive, if you will, there's nothing wrong with buying your favorite stocks, buying a handful of ETFs that represent the industries, the sub-sectors, and the whole market that you like, and sticking with them. That's a great future prospect, and if things go down, you average down. If you're a long-term investor, that's the way you have to play. It always has been the way, and it always will be.
So, Shaw, tell us a little bit about Capital Wave and some of the type of trades you do there. Give us an idea what you're doing at Capital Wave Forecast.
Well, Capital Wave Forecast really looks at money flows in and out of stocks and options, and we look for triggers based on money flows, based on volume triggers, and some other metrics that we apply to the formulas and some of the algos that drive that. And for the most part, we're long and short. I try and run it as a fairly balanced portfolio, as a not quite hedge, but I would say long and short, but it's not set up to be a hedged portfolio, and we're just looking opportunistically for great longs and great shorts. And sometimes we're in balance, we're longer or shorter based on the overall feel of the market and where I think it's going. So we don't have any restrictions there. We're purchasing whatever we like: calls, puts, stocks, shorting, and again, it's opportunistic. So we're all over the place. And that's been great. But the Zen trading circle is really I've been hitting it out of the park with that. And I've been very fortunate that in a raging bull market, the retail stocks that I've been targeting have been going down. And that is strictly put buying. So we've got quite a few positions on, and all of them just purchasing puts, so no margin necessary, and it's just a pretty straightforward play. And really been quite lucky with that. And, it's a little scary at times. Every time the market's going, making new highs, and fortunately, looking, our portfolio is getting stronger in terms of these stocks are going down. So it's a narrow focus. I'm going to expand it out to other sectors when they weaken. But right now, retail is prime target for us.
Retail is the dog of dogs, right? So do you do straight puts? Straight puts. So, and like, how far do you go out if you're going to buy a put on something?
Well, the philosophy with the Zen is to buy them as near term as pricing premium will allow in terms of value. I don't want to go too far out because some of these, a lot of the retail stocks that we target, they're known to be heading to extinction. So some of the longer term puts are a little pricey. We try and buy them 1 to 2 months out, sometimes 3 months out. We then take profits. We get a great move in the options. We've been taking triple-digit gains, and we'll close that position out, and we'll either get back into that a little later if the stock jumps up a little bit or pops a wee bit, or we'll go out and then we'll buy a little further, a few months out further. So we're kind of rolling those over on a regular basis after we take profits. It's the retail sector, so
right.
It's targeted for a specific reason, and it's been going our way.
We are with Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. Also, he's on Varney, and I had to chase him down and get him on the show, but here he is, Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends. You can hear Xander, and of course, they're getting some great guests there. In the meantime, we're going to step out of here for break, and we'll be right back with more from my friend from the 80s, Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. The Bubba Show, Top of Horror, which is coming right back after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Shaw Galani, Capital Wave Forecast, and the Zen Man. We're going to call him. He's the new Phil Jackson, the Zen Master. But actually, he's you see him on Varney all the time. He's that good-looking guy that looks like he's always suntan and traveling. And of course, he is. So Shaw, where you been lately? Where have your travels taken you to?
I was lucky to do a bunch of skiing this winter, and also I went to UCLA, so I have a lot of friends out in California and family out there. I'm there a good amount, and next week this weekend I'm heading off to London, and going to be there for a while, and then up to Scotland, play a little golf up in Scotland, and test out and check out some of the distilleries up there, Todd.
So I don't blame
I'll report back to you on those if I remember.
I don't blame you, my brother. So listen, so tell me, Shaw. You know, you're an explorator. You started out in the floor. You started out with all the mathematical stuff. Do you equate that stuff with you as you move forward? Or have you changed your style? What are the things you do now?
I use a lot of math and certainly a lot of algorithms I have a couple of really neat programs that I have had a team of guys put together for years, and we're constantly trying to improve those, and we're getting one program in particular to a point where it's really quite spectacular. I still look at all of the math and all the technical stuff as just tools. There's no one thing that just guides me. I've never created, nor have I ever had a program from anybody that I've used or delved into that I would just want to switch on and let run and you know, pump out trades. I still like to look at the stocks. I still like to go by my gut. You know, that comes from the old days, Todd, as you well know. You know, when you're on the floor and having started out on the floor, you get to feel psychology firsthand. You see it, you feel it, you understand. You have a good gut feeling if you're fortunate enough to have acquired that, and I did on the floor, and that translates over to everything I do still. So no matter what kind of math I'm using, no matter what kind of analysis I'm using, there's a lot of gut still left in it, and in the final analysis, that's the call I make, is with my gut. But tools wise, I never have enough. The more tools I have, the more comfort level I get when I'm pulling the trigger.
Now, you left the floor before the floor actually ended, correct?
Yes, I actually I left in 85, and I was hired by Lloyd's Bank. At the time, it was one of Britain's largest banks. It still is, and I was hired to run the futures and options division for Lloyd's when the treasury of the bank was headquartered in New York. So I was on the floor for 3 years before moving to New York.
And
it was great 3 years. I miss Chicago. I love Chicago. The floor experience was just absolutely phenomenal. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, a lot of guys coming in, gals coming into the business these days aren't going to ever have that opportunity, because that doesn't exist the way we know it. And boy, what a great proving ground. What a great schooling you get, you know, when you have that experience. There's nothing like it.
No, the floor is unbelievable. I think that, the biggest problem is that the actual liquidity isn't as good as when you had market makers making markets for everybody, because when you're invisible, you can pull orders and not be involved. But now everybody complains and whines about high speed, high frequency trading. And I'm going to give you my opinion first, and then you can give me yours, whether you agree or not. I don't care. I say that for the retail trader, there's nothing better than the high frequency traders, because they were the ones who forced the market into penny wide markets instead of 16th or ace or quarters. They're the ones that brought the prices down from all the brokerage. So in my mind, the high frequency traders did a big favor to the average retail trader. What do you say?
Well, it doesn't hurt the average retail trader who's trading, I think. And in terms of investing, I don't think it's really a problem either, because, you know, a couple of pennies here or there in terms of how they move, it doesn't make a big difference if you're a long-term investor. I do take issue with the high-speed trading. Todd, because, you know, there is a huge advantage they have. They're co-locating their servers right next to the exchange servers and, you know, filtering the orders through their computers before they actually reach their destination. So they read the orders. They read order flow before it gets to the destination. They can construct the inside market, within milliseconds, nanoseconds, long before it reaches an exchange. And they can get in there and take orders and hit bids. I don't think it's great. And it masks, there's a lot of volume created because of high frequency trading. And I think that to me is an issue in terms of how much liquidity is there really if these guys turn their computers off. And that, we saw that in the May 210 flash crash. We've seen it subsequently. But I'm not a huge fan. I don't like the advantage that they have. Right now there have been some issues and they haven't been monumental. It worries me that as mechanical as these markets are, that if something goes wrong computer-wise, we might find out that there are problems here we never considered, and there could be liquidity issues that we have no idea that could cause the market to come to a screeching halt, and that concerns me.
Well, let me ask you this. I can buy that. I can live with it. I don't necessarily agree, but I can live with it. But now let me ask this question. So you look at the average retail broker, and you're talking about the high frequencies, they read the orders, they get everything going. I say that the average retail broker, when they see these markets going wacko, they slow it down a little bit, and they sometimes shut down on purpose, even though it says they're an error, but sometimes they just shut them down. And so that they can't, so you can't get involved. You have any thought to that?
Well, I don't know that the retail brokers, the discount brokerages, and your brokerage houses, a lot of day traders and a lot of folks that are trading pretty regularly use. I think they're solid, but most of them, if not all of them, actually sell their order flows, and that's a problem. They're selling them to market makers, into banks that have desks that execute those kinds of orders. They then in turn turn them around, and if they don't have if they're not high frequency trading shops that they're selling them to, where those orders are sold, those folks have been reselling them to the high frequency trading shops. So that's how they're reading all of the order flow. So I don't know that the retail brokers themselves have anything to do with any issues that would be tending to liquidity problems. But I believe, and we've seen this, when the markets go a little crazy, the high frequency trading guys, they don't need to trade during that. They will in the beginning, but if spreads become too wide, they do not really stand in the middle and narrow the spreads. They're there when the spreads are narrow, and they keep them narrow because they're there with a penny spread in between, and sometimes they're working for a half a penny. But they don't. They've been known. We've seen it. They turn off their computers, and when they do, that's when the markets get a little wacky, and then we don't know what's going to happen. We've seen what could happen. We've seen that markets can move dramatically, but we haven't seen a crash because of it. I fear, Todd, that it's out there one day because it's all mechanics, and we know that there are ghosts in those machines. So at some point, one of them might just, whether it's a fat finger somewhere or whether it's a program issue that runs amok through a bunch of programs and infects a bunch of servers, that's the kind of stuff that worries me.
Yeah, but we also know that they have to, they have lockdowns and they have shutoffs. So, the exchange is going to shut them down. So, the overall crash type, the model that you and I would look at as a crash, really can't happen anymore. I mean, we saw it on the night of the election with Trump, when the futures went down limit, that would have happened in the indexes. And of course, that's why there's no longer the real ability for one of the major market meltdowns or collapses. Now, again, we can melt down and collapse over time, okay? But we're not going to have one of these, one-hit wonders again that we've seen in the past. We can get a 1,000-point down day, but again, remember the size of the index. Remember the percentage move. The ability to have a major move to the downside like we've seen in the past is now impossible because of the way that we react to markets. And again, even if you go back to 2001 and watch the reaction when the terrorist attack was, they shut the markets down for 4 days. Again, they're going to shut down and let cooler heads prevail before they let a destruction. Again, it doesn't mean we're not going to have a big meltdown again. It just means that a one-day wonder is not part of it, which goes with the circuit breakers. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Make sure you go to audibletrial.com/the Bubba Show. Download our friend's book. We can download anything. Creature from Jekyll Island, Stuart Woods, Stone Barrington, which I love, but Fed Up by Danielle D. Martino Booth. Great book. She did a great job narrating it herself as well. So go check it out. That's at audibletrial.com/the Bubba Show. In the meantime, libertytalk.fm. You can download the show every single day. And, of course, you can get the Sporting Edge there as well. We're going to step out of here for break, and we're going to come back with more from our friend Shaw Galani. We'll be right back at the break with more of The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show, coming right back to you. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Shaw Galani from the Capital Wave Forecast, my genius, my resident guy, and actually a guy I've known for a while, and we didn't know each other that well, but we ran into each other in New York, and I begged him and whined and pleaded and finally got him on, and he finally showed up, so I'm happy. So, Shaw, do you use any futures at all, or do you trade anything other than stocks and options?
No, when I was on the floor, I did a lot of futures. Now it's just basically straight stock, you know, long and short, and options, puts and calls. I don't even spread that much anymore these days, Todd. I'm pretty much linear, and it's you know, straight up long, short, calls and puts, and I like it that way. I don't, you know, the days of putting on so many spreads and butterflies and boxes and you know, all the stuff that we used to do on the floor, that's great when I'm trading pure options. But these days, I just really like straight up stocks, picking a direction for a stock, picking a direction for the market, and playing it as cleanly as I can.
No, that makes sense. I mean, do you, when you put on a trade, do you just put a stop order in, or do you just let it run?
Very often, I will use a mental stop. I don't like putting stops down. You know, we touched on the high frequency guys reading those orders, and you know, if I put on some size positions, I can't really afford to put stops out there because I know that those orders are being read. So I send down a stop to an exchange, and then if the market gets thin, that stop can get hit right away, and this happened to me so many times I don't want to even remember. And then, you know, the stock goes right back up or right back down after my position has been taken out from me. So I use mental stops, and then when I'm getting close, then I'll put the order down, or I'll wait and just put a market order down. But you know, if I'm going anywhere, obviously I'll put the stops down. I generally put a stop position down around 10 to 15% away, based on the volatility of the stock. So if the stock is not terribly volatile, I'll put a stop around 10% below or above, depending if it's a long or a short position. If it's pretty volatile, it's 15%. That's my rule of thumb.
Now, do you like, do you play like at the money as we did when we were on the floor? Do you buy in the money? What's the type of trade you'll make?
Well, it depends on the volatility of the stock. If it's pretty a volatile stock, then I'll go out of the money. I'll go a couple of you know, strikes out, and you know, they're cheaper there. I like the leverage there. And if the stock moves, the underlying stock moves in my direction, and I'm long some calls, for example, a couple months out, you know, a few strikes away, I love that leverage. You know, you can buy on the cheap side there, and you can certainly make a nice killing. And I sometimes will target where there's a large open interest position. So if I'm buying, I like to see open interest on account of the fact that there's been a lot of selling of those calls, let's say. So there's large open position. And if I'm buying those also, I know that there's a lot of guys out there who have sold those thinking there's no way that stock is going to get up there and come close to that strike price. And if it starts moving up there, there is a lot of covering of those calls that have been sold. And I'm happy to see mine go up as those, you know, the guys who've shorted those calls have to cover. So I like playing a lot that way, both on both sides, on the long calls and none of the puts too. So, but otherwise, you know, if the stock is not terribly volatile, I'll buy some in the monies or at the monies, and play it that way. And, you know, but then again, I'm not looking for big gains, but I use the options. I like to leverage. I'm looking to try and make some big numbers.
No, I agree. I've traded options for this is my 38th year. So I'm with you. You know, I agree. And I think that options are great. So let me ask you this now, you know, this is not Varney, so you're not going to get buzzed. I want to talk about the Fed for a minute. I want to get a guy's take like you. What's your take on the Fed in general? And if you have any comments, because I have plenty, but I'm going to let you go first.
I appreciate that. It'll be interesting to see if we agree. To me, the Federal Reserve is a monumental problem. I certainly understand that they did what they had to do in 2008. We didn't have much of a choice. But part of the problem, a large part of the problem, and the reason we had the issues we had in 2008 was because the Federal Reserve had kept interest rates too low, and there was a lot of leverage in the system. And you know, again, there's a hunt for yield, and when all the mortgage money had gone to prime borrowers, and there was nothing left to package because all those loans had been made, you know, the bankers said, well, we got to step the game up here. We need to sell product. Okay, let's start packaging subprime. And the more money that was available to subprime, the more that was packaged, and that game got pretty dirty. And that's what happened there. But it wouldn't have happened if interest rates had been able to move around and move up more naturally. So we're in a situation now where the Fed's balance sheet is $4.5 trillion. So it's one thing for them to, you know, start to normalize rates and move them higher incrementally. It's quite another for them to, you know, pare down their balance sheet. And now they've caused the problem as to how is the market going to perceive that? What are they going to do? Are they going to move too fast? What's really underneath the market in terms of liquidity once they remove, if they remove, however they remove the liquidity they provided? So they, you know, they just muck up the entire capital markets by manipulating rates, and now, you know, for in this unprecedented move in leveraging up their balance sheet. So I would rather see something like a Taylor rule, where we don't need the central banks manipulating interest rates, but we have a mechanical system where liquidity is added to the markets when they're tight. When the monetary aggregates are contracting, then there's some addition there. And when they're growing too quickly, we see inflation. There should be an automatic trigger where rates start to tick up, and it can be done that way without the manipulation.
So you, in a nice way, said what I always say, that they're ignorant. They have no clue, and they have no idea where they're at, and they don't allow free markets to trade. But anyways, now
we're in total agreement.
I mean, you know, one of the things that has changed, Shaw, I think, in a while, is that we don't truly have the free markets anymore, because everything is, you know, is really more price manipulated. Like the rates are manipulated, which then manipulates housing prices. In your mind, do we ever get back to a true free market?
You have hit the nail on the head, Todd. Though I see the exact same problem, and I see it as being monumental. We do not have free markets, and that is a problem. And that's one of the reasons we have the inequality and the income inequality and wealth inequality gaps in this country, is because it's unfair. You know, your average investor, your average saver is being hammered, and the folks who can afford to leverage, you know, they have the advantages. And that's all because the system is interest rates are being manipulated. And that, all of that stems from the Federal Reserve. And most of what they do is politicized one way or the other. And so we're in agreement. Are we capable of getting back to free markets? We are. I think it would take some bold action in terms of Congress. I'd like to see them just wipe out the Fed. I think that would be the first step, and a huge step towards getting back to actual free markets.
Well, the Congress will never do that because they need the free money that they get out of there. I mean, this is the whole problem, as I see it, Shaw, is that they don't allow the markets, and the Congress sits there. Now, you know they're going to raise the debt ceiling again, right? I mean, there's not an issue, not a question. Yeah. They don't have to live on a budget. Of course, Shaw Galani, he don't live on a budget. He just goes everywhere and travels all over the world. But no, I'm just, in all seriousness, we have to live on our budget. You and I can only spend what we make and, you know, what we put away, whatever. But the government doesn't have to do that. And I think that's one of the bigger issues. And they have that the crutch of the Fed that continues to print money for them when they need it. What do you think about that?
Well, I think what you're saying is not only right, it's unfortunately not spoken about enough. And folks don't realize, and you're absolutely dead on right, folks don't realize that the Federal Reserve finances U.S. deficits. And without the Federal Reserve to finance U.S. deficits, Congress would actually have to raise taxes, would have to reduce spending, would have to balance its budget somehow, because it wouldn't be possible for them to keep on spending. The Federal Reserve just prints money and facilitates, you know, the sale of treasuries and to finance the debt. So that's another, you are so right about that. This is something that if every newspaper, and I don't mean just financial press, but if every newspaper announced this is the problem that America is having, and the way to get back to, you know, a better, safer economy where there's actually normalized growth is to, and so interest rates aren't manipulated, don't have to be manipulated. If you can get rid of the Federal Reserve, go to something like a Taylor rule, you could recreate the free markets, and you could force governments to live on a budget, to actually balance the budget and reduce the deficits. And that would be just fantastic for the country. I could say good luck with that, however.
And of course, he is correct that, you know, this the things that we talk about here all the time just don't really, you know, we just can't seem to get past that. And that one of the problems is that we're always used to doing things. This is the way we've always done it. And of course, that's a tragedy. But that is part of the way it is. And of course, you know, we need to get some things done, and guys like Shaw understand it, just like you understand it and we understand it, and we got to get the rest to understand it. But in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. And in the meantime, audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show lets you download books on tape or books online on your phone. And, of course, you got to check out Fed Up by our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth, or as well as The Creature from Jekyll Island, or if you're a big Stuart Woods fan like I am, Stone Barrington, my idol. In the meantime, The Bubba Show, LibertyTalk.fm allows you to download it every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, just a reminder, our final hedging class until the fall comes in, and that's June 14th, Thursday. So if you want to check it out, go to BubbaTrading.com. We're going to step out of here for a break and be back with more from Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, come right back after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz is here with Shaw Galani from Capital Wave Forecast. And you see him on Varney all the time. They even call him at home. He's got his own camera, I bet you, in his office, because he's got to be on call, this guy, Shaw. He's from UCLA. He's got psychological. This guy knows it all. He's got it dug in there. And so, Shaw, let me ask you this. Now, you were in the banking business a little bit with Lloyds, right?
Yes. Well, in the Treasury. The Treasury of the bank is where all of the capital markets for the bank are, and the trading occurs. So not an investment banker per se, but trading.
So now I have first of all, I do not think the Fed should have bailed out the banks. I think they should have. You know what? If you wanted to be the true lender of last resort, they should have just let the banks go under, and they could have made all the depositors good. And then the banks should have been wouldn't have been rewarded to be able to do the same thing. Because one of the problems I have, and I want to get your views on this, fractional banking, and where these guys, because not only does the Fed print money, but so do the banks. They print money because they can lend out at 9-to-1. So if they don't get, even if they get half, if half stiff and half pay, they're still making a ton of money, and they'll continue to wind down the ones that didn't pay and try to grind them out. So at the end of the day, they're really printing money as well. What do you say?
Well, you're preaching to the choir. Agree 100%. I would like to see the Glass-Steagall reenacted and commercial banks separated from investment banks. Let the investment banks trade, let them leverage themselves up, let them, you know, find capital where they find it from folks and investors who want to be swashbucklers. That's all well and good. Separate the commercial banks, and why not utilitize them? Why not force them to have a 25% reserve ratio? Now, if they're not trading, they're not trying to leverage themselves up, they're not going to get in trouble. If there's something like a 25% reserve ratio, we know every depositor would know that their money would be safe, and the banks would have nothing else, nothing left to do but go out and try and find places to lend all of their money. And they would do quite well. They wouldn't make the crazy profits that they make now, but they wouldn't subject the economy to the ups and downs that they do subject it to. They wouldn't subject us to the, you know, the pain of things that we experienced in 2008. I mean, that's all about these big banks leveraging themselves. As you and I know, all of those big banks are all a lot bigger now. So, yes, I agree with you 100%. Banks should be in the business of lending, and back on the Fed. You know, the Fed, when they buy treasuries, when they add this money, this $4.5 trillion into the economy, it's not going into the economy. It's going to the banks. And that's why there isn't a whole lot of trickle down, or it takes so long for it to trickle down, because the banks are using that money to leverage themselves up, to build up their own profits by trading treasuries with the Fed. And it's just a game, and it's a circular game that doesn't make its way down to the economy. It's one of the reasons that the economy, you know, was kind of stuck in, and, you know, 1 to 1.2% GDP growth. If the banks were to lend, and they had nothing else to do with the money but lend it out to entrepreneurs, to business, you know, startups, we'd see a lot more productivity, we see a lot more growth, and we have a lot more opportunity around the country.
The only thing that trickles down, Shaw, is the debt, because the one thing the middle class does get is they get stuck with the bill every single time. Why do they want inflation so bad? Because they want my assets to get raised so I can pay more property tax and everything else, so I can pay off that ridiculous debt that they put on the books. But anyway, so back to market, Shaw. I don't want to end us on here. So your long-term view, what's your 60-day view of the markets, or just in general?
Well, I think there's a real firm bid under the market, because, again, we're talking about interest rates being manipulated. They're still low. I don't care that the Fed is going to hike again and again. They're still relatively low, historically low. And so, you know, you pension funds do not have the kind of returns. Retirees are not getting the kind of returns in terms of anything fixed income wise where they can possibly ever retire. So the only way to garner a return, sufficient return, is to go out there on the risk spectrum. That means getting into this equity markets. And so hence the proverbial, there's a bid under the market. And that's where it all stems for me. And so I, again, long-term bullish. 60 days out, bullish. But that being said, as you well know, on any given moment, you know, there could be profit taken because something geopolitical, something domestic, something out of left field, perhaps even a black swan, shadows the markets, and there could be an awful lot of profit taken because there are a lot of profits on the table. But barring something like that, extraneous happening, the market should continue to go up.
Agreed. I believe that the markets are waiting for a reason. It will not be economic related because nobody cares. It'll be because the pundits continue to pump it up and the brokers continue to pump it up. And of course, right now the volume's light. It looks like it's more retail than anything else, but we'll have that story for another day. Shaw Galani, you got 60 seconds. Tell us about economic capital wave forecast and your information you want to give out, your website. And so if the listeners want to check it out, they can come and see you.
Well, they can reach, find out information about the Capital Wave Forecast News and also Zen Trading Circle Newsletter by actually reading my column, which is titled Wall Street Insights and Indictments.com. So I write there twice a week. I'm talking about insights about Wall Street, insights on the market, and indictments in terms of pointing fingers at, you know, who the bad boys are and who the bad actors are. And I do name names there. So Wall Street Insights and Indictments.com is where you can access me, and it's some interesting reading there.
Shaw Galani, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, man.
Todd, great to be with you. Thank you.
And that was our old friend, actually, from the 80s, Shaw Galani, that used to be at the floor as well, and hadn't seen him for 30 years and ran into him. So we brought him on. And of course, he's doing some interesting stuff and, you know, at the Zen Reader and his indictments and things. And again, check it out. He does name names, so it's kind of cool. And of course, you know me, I name every name. I got no secrets from my listeners. But in the meantime, you know, we've got a lot of things going on. And of course, tomorrow is the Fed meeting, the second half of the Fed meeting. And of course, they'll come out and the white smoke will come out of the chimney and we'll know what they're going to do. But of course, we kind of already know what they're going to do. And I don't think it's going to be any real big surprise. I think that, you know, generally you've got a market. But unfortunately, we're dealing with the worst group of people that have A, no interest, and B, no consideration for the middle class. They're strictly about helping the rich get richer and screwing the middle class and trying to wipe it out. So obviously, whatever they're doing, it will not be in benefit with you because they don't have trickle-down economics. They have trickle-down debt. So the money don't trickle down. Just somehow they manage to trickle the debt down. And, you know, so this is also a reminder that, you know, we're going to have our final hedging class of the year, well, not year, but until October. And of course, with markets the way they're now acting, you may want to consider, again, I'm not twisting your arm. If you want to come, great. If you don't want to come, hey, no worries. You still obviously still get to come and listen to me here. But in the meantime, we do teach the full course and kind of help you understand how to hedge and take care of your portfolio. So you can go to BubbaTrading.com and check that out. Also, you know, Audible Books is a sponsor and affiliate of the Bubba Show. And of course, we're looking to build some stuff there. And of course, audibletrial.com/The Bubba Show gets you the ability to download a couple of books for free. And I think that obviously you want to check out Fed Up by our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth. She did a great job reading it. I got to tell you, honestly, I enjoyed it immensely. And I think I should recommend it to anybody to get the real inside scoop on the Fed from a straight up insider, not a conspiracy theorist. So I think it's great. In the meantime, go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day. Help us out. And of course, we've got the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And that'll do it for the day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Hortson. Certainly appreciate you being here, and always a great time hanging out with my friends here on The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Hortson, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks. Wake up, Maggie.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.